Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back after our two-month hiatus to spring ball starts this week. People want content. People want to listen to what is this Gopher 2024 team going to look like. So you know what we are, Luke? We're men of the people. And we decided, why don't we drop some podcast episodes this week to talk about what can we look like or look forward to with this 2024 spring season? How are you, Luke?
I'm pretty good. And you know, Ryan, we're only here too because Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group was kind enough to support us on these episodes. So if you didn't notice, Ryan, spring came a little bit early, and you know what a busy time of year it is in the spring when it comes to buying and selling homes. So if you are a Gopher fan and you want to make an impact in name, image, and likeness and make sure that a portion of the proceeds from your home sale go to Dinkytown Athletes, you should work with Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group.
As someone who's bought a home in the spring here in the last 5 years, I know how hot of a market is, and to Luke's point, if you do not have a realtor and you're talking about it with your significant other, if you're going to go in and buy yourself, and go to teamdinkytown.com. Again, 1% of it goes to Dinkytown Athletes. Or if you want to give them a call, it's 612-250-8562.
All right. So if you're a first-time home buyer, maybe you've outgrown your current home, or you're an empty nester looking to downsize, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group has you covered. So if you want to help raise thousands of dollars in NIL for your favorite team, maybe that's Gopher football, maybe that's women's hockey, maybe that's volleyball, maybe that's men's basketball, maybe that's women's basketball. It doesn't matter. Dinkytown Athletes has you covered, but work with Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. They can help get you a showing. They can help you sell your house, whatever. But if you're looking to buy in particular, give them a call today. Go to their website, teamdinkytown.com, or again, you can call them at 612-250-8562. Ryan, we got to talk now about spring ball. It's that time of year again, but we probably should recap just the things that we've missed over the last couple of years. I don't want to focus on these.
A couple months.
Yeah, it felt like
I have a lot to say about the last couple of years, Luke.
It's felt like a couple of years since I've actually sat down and talked with you, but it's only been a couple of months. But you know, since the bowl game, you and I have not talked on this forum about the UCLA interest in PJ Fleck, nor his now contract extension that has been approved, I believe, by the Board of Regents.
Not a contract extension.
Amendment.
Which is the first thing I want to make clear here to all of our listeners, as someone who has spent way too much time on this thing. It's a contract amendment. There were no years added to the deal. There were just some little money bumps, which we can get into, Luke.
Yeah, so in general, the smoke was real on the UCLA deal. The other reality is that UCLA is in a not-so-great financial situation, so as much as PJ maybe would have wanted to go there, we don't know that. It's not going to happen because, frankly speaking, UCLA is in a real meat grinder.
Yeah, I mean, that was that time period, I'll say this, was what was it that final weekend of February,
something like that. It was a weird time too, right? Like, it's not a normal coaching carousel cycle time.
Correct. It was Chip Kelly ends up accepting the Ohio State offensive coordinator job. Just all the smoke that we had heard it was like the worst kept secret, I'll say this, in college football the last 3-4 months, that Chip Kelly wanted out. And he hadn't been recruiting. I had heard stories that he hadn't worn UCLA apparel on the recruiting trail the entire 2024 or 2023, I should say. I mean, that's how much this thing was discombobulated. So that when he took the Ohio State job, who did Brett McMurphy and the national reporters put out there? PJ Fleck. And I know a lot of listeners have said before, well, why would they want him? He stinks here. You can't even win. He won 5 regular season games last year. Look, I don't care about any of that, more or less. I'm just here to tell you, from the amount of phone calls and text messages that I received talking things through with people who are absolutely in the know over that 48-hour stretch before he tweeted out, I think on Sunday night, that he was down in Mexico, anniversary trip with his wife, and he's excited about Minnesota. That thing was real. It was incredibly real. It's as real as it's ever been, in my opinion. And that's where, to Luke's point, if UCLA wasn't stupid broke, I'd have been a lot more curious to seeing what had happened. But Luke, it's something that you and I had talked about offline for quite some time, because I think I had told you privately that if there was going to be one job I could see PJ Fleck leaving for, the one that had always been number one on my board was UCLA. Mm-hmm. A lot better access to recruiting, gets to go live in LA, yada, yada. But to your point, the Bruins athletic department and just university is just not in good shape. I think they've run in a deficit in their athletic department for now 5 consecutive years. You look at the last fiscal year for them, they lost 25, 30 something million dollars. They didn't have the money to pay a $7 million buyout plus give PJ Fleck a raise.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, the other thing that they had is they had contracted all of the assistants on 2 years. So they would have had to, he would have either had to take them up or they would have had to pay, buy them out as well. So
their chancellor is also not in good standing. Plus, I know Chip Scoggins' guy, Martin Jarman, their athletic director, is not exactly in good water either. So that whole thing is just, if they just would have had their stuff together over the years, I'm curious to see what would have happened. But PJ Fleck now has a new contract amendment, of which, what does that mean? That means there are retention bonuses for the head coach. So in year one here in 2024, he gets $350,000 here last week. And then if he is still the coach at the end of the year, December 31st, 2024, he gets an additional $350,000. And then going forward, he has vesting options on the 31st of each subsequent year of $100,000 more than what he was in 2024. So $800,000 in 2025, $900,000 in 2026, yada, yada. Now, I know people are upset about all that. I'm just telling you, that puts him about league average in the Big Ten in terms of salary, in terms of head coaching salary. And oh, by the way, Luke, maybe the more important thing to me in this whole thing, there are two things. Number one, I love to talk about it on Parent is Bear, but I'll talk about it again here. You know what? Assistant salary pool finally got a little bit of a bump.
Yeah, I'm aware.
The amount of thank you texts and phone calls I got for that, I was like, don't be calling me or texting me thank you. It's more so, it's embarrassing. And I know people on Gopher Illustrated and I see a little bit differently on it, but the assistant / support staff pool got a 500,000 bump, which now puts them 15th in the Big Ten out of 18 teams instead of 17th or 18th. Oh, good for us. Oh, good for them. Now they have some guys that aren't dead last in their salary pool. Do you have any thoughts and feelings about all that?
I
haven't really talked about it.
I mean, we messaged about it back before. I generally don't agree with you. As it pertains to salary pool, that's a priority. I think it's a two-pronged thing. Number one, it's a priority of the head coach, which he hasn't made that much of a priority in his contract, right? We obviously know the Jerry Kill era where he made that very much a priority of his contract. Then second, PJ has a tendency to get guys and give guys opportunities that don't have a ton of experience. In my opinion, you don't pay people based on the job they have if they haven't performed in that job. So I generally don't have a problem with it. So that's my personal opinion. Now, this would be a very different story, I think, if Kirk Shiraka and Joe Rossi were still here, right? But they're not.
For other Big Ten institutions. Yeah, now.
But they're not. So
right,
and that can be a function. That can be a function of their. That can be a function of the salary pool and what PJ is willing to pay. Or alternatively, it could be a function of PJ wasn't willing to pay it with the constraints he had, and he didn't advocate for it. So therefore, he went for the younger person that's now cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. I think I could. We, you and I, could spend 45 minutes on this. And
yeah,
I
don't we probably shouldn't. It's not that interesting.
The only other thing I would note here, people, and you're going to hear me say this a lot over the course of the next 9 months, because evidently there's going to be a bad loss at some point in 2024, and I'm going to hear
from Matt. There's always a bad loss. Yeah.
There's always a bad loss. I mean, there's always a couple bad losses. I mean, who are we kidding? But it's going to be, well, fire Fleck. It's now year eight. Fire him. I'm going to tell you this right now, loyal listeners, and there's thousands of you for some reason, and we appreciate each and every one of you. PJ Fleck, in my opinion, could go 0-12 this year, and there's not a shot he gets fired. Why is that, Luke Buehr? Well, if you look at what it would take for Mark Coyle to fire him, it would be 65% of his remaining contract. And 65% of his remaining contract for 2024 until December 31st, over $22 million. Yeah. Well, then, Ryan, they'll just fire him in January. It's not how that thing works. It's still over $18 million for the entire course of 2025. And Luke, do you know how many head football coaches in college football have been fired with a buyout north of $18 million?
Maybe two.
Three.
Oh, wow. That's close.
And one of those is the Jimbo Fisher thing. And I'm telling you right now, I can't see a world in which Mark Coyle gets approval from the people above him to fire PJ Fleck with a $22 and/or $18 million buyout. Now, things can and it could potentially change, I suppose, but I'm just telling you right now, listeners, I'm preparing you for 6-7 months from now when you start to say, well, why doesn't Mark Coyle make a move? Because that buyout is gaudy. Now, if there is someone who wants to hire him away, it is a $7 million buyout until December 31st, 2024, and then it drops to $5 million in 2025. So,
yeah.
This whole thing, man, I've learned anything, Luke, and you have a lovely lovely wife who is obviously a lawyer, and I don't understand contract verbiage as well as she does, but I had to become very well-versed about 3-4 weeks ago when this whole thing was going down.
Yeah, in general, like, the odds that PJ Fleck goes 0-12, I think is near zero, but okay. So we can play in that hypothetical world if we want to.
If you lose Rhode Island and Nevada in September, burn the program down. I'm telling you right now.
I generally think that's you're wishing for the worst in that situation,
Which is very Minnesota sports.
It could be. The other thing is I'm a firm believer in continuity is definitely your friend, especially in this new age of college athletics. So. I mean, I really hope, I obviously want him to have success, but I'm not going to be a quick trigger to fire someone on a bad season. I recognize that, you know, people are upset about 5-7, but I also value the stability that they have in the program. You know, academically, off the field, there hasn't been issues. Yes, I want to see more results, but in the same respect, like, we got an extra game in a bowl game in which they won because of that stability, and I think there's value in that as well.
We'll get into this at a later date here in the spring, but just to give over the 30,000 foot view, FanDuel's over under win totals came out for the Big Ten. Minnesota is in last in the Big Ten at 4.5. I think that number is probably a win and a half to two wins too low for me.
Yeah.
Why do I say that? Because I look at the schedule, and Luke, I know you don't know it off the top of your head, but I'm just going to tell you, would you agree with this statement? There are two games Minnesota will certainly be double-digit point home favorites in. That'll be Rhode Island and Nevada. Mm-hmm. There will be two games in which they're going to be double-digit point underdogs. That'll be at Ann Arbor against the Michigan Wolverines and at home against Penn State, who's currently the number eight team in the country. And then every other game, including USC, UCLA, and Wisconsin and Iowa, in my opinion, will be within a touchdown spread. And then it's what do you do in those coin flip games?
Yeah. And you know, it's very similar to last year, and we'll get into this, you know, later in the summer probably. But the the Gophers weren't very good in coin flip games last year. And this is probably a good segue into talking about the offense here in the spring and the changes that we've seen there. You know, some of that might have been at the signal caller, and they've replaced that, and they seemingly think they've upgraded Ryan.
They certainly think that, and we'll get into that here in a second. I would note there is no spring game, and I know I've seen your Gopher Illustrated messages, I've seen your emails, your DMs to me.
I
understand the disdain.
Can I put my hat in the ring here real quick?
Absolutely, go for it.
I have no problem with this. Like, we haven't had a traditional spring game in like 5 years, probably. And this is just like formalizing the fact that we haven't had it. So I don't have a problem. I love that they have an event for Dinkytown athlete members.
Is this upcoming Saturday. So if you want to
23rd.
Go to a Gopher football practice, become a DTA member, which is as low as $10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just pay the $10 to start supporting the football athletes, you can go watch a spring practice this upcoming Saturday.
And I really don't have a problem with no spring game. They're super vanilla. We don't have an immense number of people in an atmosphere like a Nebraska or like a whoever. I don't even know who has good spring game attendances, right? We don't have that atmosphere, so I guess I don't see the loss. I get that people are like, well, it's something to do in the spring and bring my kids to. I feel for you, but in the same respect, like, I don't think it's that big a deal. The weather has been a factor. I don't know.
Constantly. Which is part of the reason why, you know, from talking with some people over at the university, some of this I would say is about they're tired of planning spring games and then the weather just isn't conducive. Mm-hmm. And then they have to cancel and they get all the hate.
Yeah.
In their mind, I think they're choosing the lesser of two evils.
Now, I understand that
there's always going to be an evil part of this. And even myself, I would love to have more access. I mean, I'll be talking to PJ Fleck on Wednesday for the first time since the Quick Lane Bowl. That would be 85 days ago. I mean, I don't know of another Big Ten coach who hasn't spoken in 85 days. Not another Big Ten football coach that would be, but that's here nor there. It's clear that it is just kind of what it is over there. I don't think they're too worried about trying to engage with their fan base, more or less, especially in the spring. But I don't get as upset as I used to over it, which I know for a lot of you listeners, I don't know if they believe me, Luke, but I'm so apathetic towards it because what is going to change with me getting all huffed and puffed, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I get for you that it's nice to have access and to be able to glean more information or, you know, have more pieces to write. I get that. But for the average fan, like I can totally understand the point where it's, oh, well, we scheduled a spring game and guess what? Actually, the weather ended up being pretty terrible. So we're going to move it inside. Nobody can come in or like, you know, a few number of people can come in and somebody drove from like Moose Lake,
Omaha or
wherever they came, right?
Yep.
And now it's like, well, they can't go. And those people are mad. You don't want to make them mad. It's easier to say, we're just not going to do it. And then those people don't make the plans. But I mean, I get it, but in the same refrain, I want to make clear, like, we just haven't had it. Now is the time to do it. And if it's set the precedent, and it's not like they're the only ones not doing a spring game. There are lots of programs around the country.
Iowa does one. I don't think Northwestern does one. Again, I don't pretend to know as much about the other Big Ten schools, even though I'm obviously a Big Ten beat writer, but I know those two specifically come off the top of my head in terms of teams who don't exactly do a lot of fan-friendly things for their Big Ten, former Big Ten West fan bases. But yeah, so if you want to go to one, there's one on March 23rd for Dinkytown athletes, members only. And then there is one for the general public on April 11th. I think that'll be an afternoon one if you're trying to set your schedule, trying to get some buddies to come down to Dinkytown with you. And as always, Luke, I will be at everything they let me come to. And which reminds me, at Gopher Illustrated right now, it's 50% off an annual membership, savings of $60. The basketball portal opened today, and I think there's going to be some action, hopefully in the positive, for your Golden Gopher basketball team. We'll see how some things shake out here in the next couple of weeks. Plus, recruiting is finally starting to take off from the train station. Minnesota will have a lot of offered guys on campus here over the next 3-4 weeks. So if you want to do the annual membership, I'd love to have you. If you want to just do the $1 for the first month, and then once that promotional period ends, Luke, do you remember what you get as a part of a Gopher Illustrated membership at 24/7?
You get Paramount Plus.
You do get Paramount Plus for free. So even though it'll go from $1 to $9 a month or whatever it is, you then get Paramount Plus for free. And oh, by the way, do you know what some, I would imagine at least one game of the Gophers will be on CBS, which means if you don't have CBS for whatever reason, guess what? You get Paramount Plus to watch it for free, or you can watch Halo, Mean Girls, whatever you want on that Paramount Plus. So there's my pitch. If you want to know what's going on at Gopher practice, but you can't make it, I'll be there. And as always, I'll have plenty of notes.
Yeah. Okay. So, and as for notes, you have plenty of notes here for this episode.
I actually prepared Luke in the pre-production meeting for a little discussion about this offense because it was okay. Is that even, it was okay in year one of Greg Harbaugh, or how would you describe
it? So I think there, if you took the general sentiment on Twitter, people really didn't like Greg Harbaugh.
Twitter
from a,
can't be the general sentiment.
No, no.
Twitter, but, as someone who interacts there every day of their life, is
it's not the place you want to be for sure. But it, on game days, the general sentiment was he wasn't a good play caller. Then we would come to this podcast and say, actually,
what percentage of fan bases do you think like their offensive coordinator?
Oh, I'm very well aware. I'm trying to make a point that I think we generally thought that play calling was actually pretty good, and maybe you could argue was improved. It was execution that was the bane of their existence. Like, I remember back to that North Carolina game being like, oh man, they're calling some
running wide open, and Ethan just couldn't hit him.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The Cole Kramer interception was really bad. But yeah, in general, I thought some of the concepts they were doing, and how they were setting things up, I thought was good. Now, I think there's still the elephant in the room that is PJ Fleck and how he game manages and what, you know, freedom he gives an offensive coordinator. That's a totally different discussion. But I was encouraged with the Greg Harbaugh era in the first year from a play calling perspective and what we could at least see.
Just like anything with that Gopher offense last year, I think I would call it inconsistent. Now, what do the numbers tell you? Well, the numbers tell you they scored about 20 points a game. They were 12th in the Big Ten with about 300 total yards of offense, 7th in the Big Ten with 157 rushing yards, and they were yet again, for the third or fourth consecutive season, one of the worst passing offenses in college football. So I think that's probably where we need to start. It's going to be a new quarterback, as Ethan Kaliak-Manis, the Greek Rifle, is now at Rutgers competing for a job there this spring with your guy, Gavin Wimsett, Luke.
Yeah, but just real quick, who wins that? Who wins that starting position?
That's a good question. I think Wimsett would probably be 60-40 for me. He's the incumbent.
I think it's the other way.
With Kirk Straka, whereas Ethan had a year off. I will continue to say, and I know a lot of you, trust me, I've seen your emails and your messages and yada yada. I'm aware that I swung and missed on Ethan last year. I still think there's something in there, and I'm not going to give up on Ethan yet, especially after just 1 year as the starter. But I will be very curious to see if Kirk Shiraka can fix what I called all of last season, antsy Ethan. I mean, we talked at length about first half Ethan versus second half Ethan.
Mm-hmm.
First half Ethan was always, well, not always, more times than I was actually pretty freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he would get pressure in him, or and just in the second half of games, he would fall apart. And that's where you look at the stats for Ethan last year. Just over 1,800 passing yards, 53%
mm-hmm.
completion percentage, 14 touchdowns, 9 picks. I mean, if there was ever a word to describe Ethan Kaliak-Manis in 2023, it was inconsistent, and it just plagued them constantly all season long.
Yep, no question. So insert Max Brosmer.
Insert Mr. New Hampshire himself. Yeah. So for those of you who don't remember or need a little refresher course, to who is Max Brosmer? Well, he has been the multi-year starter for one of Luke Buehr's favorite CAA teams in the FCS.
Yeah, the New Hampshire Wildcats. Let's go, Aurora.
So he was just up this past season, and in December, I should say, for the Walter Payton Award, which is essentially the FCS Heisman. He was a finalist, didn't end up winning it. But in 31 career games for New Hampshire, he threw for over 8,000 yards, 69 touchdowns, a very nice amount, and 19 interceptions. And just this past season in 2023, he led all FCS quarterbacks in passing yards, first downs through the air, and passing attempts. So statistically, just the surface level stuff, it looks good. But okay, what does Pro Football Focus say? Now, I know Pro Football Focus, not the end-all be-all, but you look at his overall grades the last couple of seasons, 82.4 and 78.8. I'll remind you that the average benchmark for them is a 60. So if you're in 78 or 82, you're doing really, really well. And if you want to just look at his specific passing PFF grades, 83.5 and 79.5. So as someone who actually saw him throw at Pro Day for the first time, he's probably an inch taller than Tanner Morgan, I would say. Really big lower half. He's got a good arm on him. But the thing I would say before we continue to get into it, Luke, is I obviously have connections around this Gopher football program. And the one thing they've really stressed to me when we, you know, we're talking about the offense, or they bring up to me unprompted, is his leadership abilities. Mm-hmm. The way that he has stepped on campus, and he's been in the film room at 5 a.m. constantly. He's organizing team workouts. He's getting the receivers and the running backs and the offensive line together to watch film so he can understand what they did last year. How does Darius Taylor like this called versus Daniel Jackson versus Elijah Spencer, yada, yada. He's trying to get as far ahead as humanly possible before spring ball so that when spring ball starts here in a few days, they hit the ground running. And I would just say this. I don't know if that'll translate to another win or maybe another couple wins, but I'm telling you, it's been a little bit different in that quarterback room in that regard because of how experienced he's been. And I know that there is a lot of optimism about what Max Brosberg can bring. And if he can just bring, to me, Luke, dependability, consistency.
Yeah.
Daniel Jackson, you have Jameson Gears, you have Lemecki Brockington, you have Elijah Spencer, which I know there's a lot more optimism about Elijah Spencer being ready in year two of this program. But if you can just get consistency from the quarterback position, which for a guy that is a senior, I don't think is that unreasonable to guess or to ask for. Someone who's had a lot of success at the FCS level. Now we'll see how that translates from playing against the University of Maine to going against the University of Michigan or North Carolina here just at the end of August. But he has done everything correct in terms of what the people I talked to's mind with the way he's come in, been there early, staying late, putting in all the time in the film room, organizing team workouts, trying to get as acclimated as humanly possible to try and make sure that when spring ball starts here in a few days, this offense hits the ground running.
Yeah, you talk about that leadership piece. I think that's interesting because I listened to the Gopher, I think it's the Golden Gopher podcast. It's the one with Justin Gard. And he actually interviewed Max Brosmer. And the kid's unbelievably well-spoken.
He is a treat to talk to.
Yeah.
Someone who got him on the phone for 20 minutes and we'll get him here in a few days again. But he is incredibly smart.
Yeah.
Very football smart. Academically smart. I believe he's going. I'm going to get this wrong. It's a neurologist, something like that.
He was like a biomed major. Yeah. And I think he has the desire to go to med school, which was one of the reasons he looked at the University of Minnesota. So again, not everybody's looking at NIL. They're looking at other opportunities that universities present them, right? So, but in general, yeah, like smart dude, well articulated. He just seems like a kind of a football junkie as well, which, you know, you alluded to getting into the film room really early. And he also has aspirations.
Spring break, for example, when he went back down to Georgia, where he's from, you know, who was also there. Some of the receivers, like Elijah Spencer, Lemecki Brockington. I know Max Shikanjansky was also down there working with him, like Kenrick Lanier as well. Like he's trying to do everything he possibly can for this one last year of college football for him to hopefully set himself up for, if it goes well, and potentially some NFL success in terms of being a late round draft pick potentially. Now, again, that's if things really go well. This isn't me saying Max Brosmer is going to be a top 100 pick.
Right.
There is one player on this roster that we'll talk about today. I can say with all of my soul, I truly believe will be a top 100 guy in the next NFL draft, but that would not be Max Brosmer. So I would just say this about Brosmer before you go and move on to Drake Lindsay or Max Shikanjanski. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He's got it, but he is doing everything he can to try and make sure this Gopher offense is doing everything right come March and April.
So if we look at the rest of the quarterback room, we're all aware that Cole Kramer got married. He moved on to his professional life. Kudos to him and to his wife. But I think it's safe to say, Ryan, that at this moment, we maybe don't know who the next QB2 is. We obviously know about Drake Lindsay, the highly touted recruit that came in. We know about Max Shikanjanski, who served as the backup quarterback in the bowl game this year. We also know that the Gophers lost out on a transfer that ended up going elsewhere. You know, it's very possible though that they might explore, the portal for yet another quarterback to act as the backup. I mean, I think all options are really on the table. So what's your pulse at least on backup quarterback position?
I would be, and to play the Gopher Gridiron Radio drinking game, gobsmacked if Minnesota doesn't bring in another transfer quarterback, and that would be scholarship variety because, as you mentioned, they tried to bring in one in December, January by the name of Logan Fife from Fresno State. He backed out at the last minute so he could go to Montana, who an FCS program, one that lost their quarterback. He gets to go there and be the starter, and he didn't want to come in and be the Max Brosmer backup.
Now, don't blame
him. Expectations for the spring for these quarterbacks that will enter the portal, I think they're well aware it's going to be very tough for them to win a starting spot in summer and fall camp. But I'm telling you, Minnesota is going to bring in a transfer scholarship quarterback that will hopefully compete with, there's a lot of expectations for him. The Arkansas Gatorade Player of the Year in Drake Lindsay, from what I've heard since he's been on campus, he's been attached at the hip of Max Brosmer, which is exactly what they wanted. They want him to learn as much as he possibly can from the 12 months that Max Brosmer will be here and try to understand this is what a successful collegiate quarterback looks like. Now, Drake is much bigger than him, 6'4 plus, 6'5, bigger body, live arm. But I think the thing that has been stressed to me so far is for a freshman quarterback, between the ears, he's picking up things maybe a little bit more quicker than some previous true freshman quarterbacks of yesteryear. Now we'll see how that translates in the spring from going against whatever Fayetteville, Arkansas plays, which peace and love. If there's anybody from Arkansas listening to this, I know he won a state championship. I know he was the Gatorade Player of the Year, but going against Arkansas's best to what the Big Ten level of speed is a little bit different, especially in brand new concepts. So I still think that should be a lot of optimism for Drake Lindsay. It's just, I don't expect it to look great at times this spring as he's going through his first spring ball when he should be going to prom here in a few weeks.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about running back. Obviously there's been some turnover there with Sean Tyler moving on, with Zach Evans moving on to North Texas. Sean Tyler, obviously probably trying to make a pro career of it. I want to hear about those that transferred in, Ryan, but I also think we have to make sure that we highlight, we saw a phenomenal effort from Darius Taylor in the bowl game. We saw the diversity that he can bring, both catching the ball, running the ball, but also playing a little wildcat quarterback as well. This is your feature star, and retaining him was obviously big. Right now the question is keeping him healthy and featuring him in a way that maybe we haven't seen other running backs featured. Obviously, they're the carries, but maybe getting him involved in the passing game more, etc. This is a really dynamic athlete that we're really fortunate to have coming back.
I mean, they certainly are. I mean, to your point earlier, though, gone are 100-plus carries from Sean Tyler, who's, to your point, trying to make an NFL career of it. It sucks that his 1 year as a Gopher is only going to be remembered by the fact that he couldn't stop fumbling. And it couldn't stop fumbling from the first game. And he didn't have that issue at Western Michigan. And it sucks because he had, if you think about the percentile of outcomes that could have been here, I would imagine his 1 year at Minnesota will be remembered as one that was probably a 10-15% outcome for him. But reality is reality. And then RB4 from last year in terms of carries, Zach Evans is now at North Texas. But this offense is going to revolve around Darius Taylor. And to your point, Luke, and it's one I will ask PJ Fleck about potentially on Wednesday, if not on Wednesday, for sure this spring, what has to happen for PJ Fleck to trust more than one running back? What has to happen for him not to give a guy 30 plus carries and then see in a few games or just the game after that, they have no tread left on the tires? Because it's in year eight, that shouldn't be the case where you're giving a guy 30 plus carries a game. It just shouldn't be that way in modern day college football anymore. And that's where I think he may be a little bit stuck on Mo Ibrahim being such an anomaly in so many different things, that Darius Taylor gets 90 plus carries in September and then he pops a tire and then you only get to see him for two, three more quarters for the rest of the regular season because of that. But when Darius Taylor was healthy, I mean, a three-time freshman of the week would have been four-time freshman of the week if the bowl games would have had them. He was the top graded player on offense last year for Minnesota with an 87.4 grade as a true freshman, which is insane. And in the four contests where he played into the fourth quarter, Luke, he averaged over 8 missed tackles per game with over 120 yards after contact per game. That's absurd. That's Mo Ibrahim type of numbers as a freshman. So the hope would be going into 2024 here that Darius can get his body right and then Minnesota can just keep him. I just want him to get 20 to 25 touches per game. That's all I want for him. Now, that's a ton of touches. I'm not saying I don't want Darius Taylor to touch the ball a lot. I mean, that's going to be, at the end of a game, a third, if not 40% of Minnesota's offensive snaps. But we're at a point now where one of the big points of emphasis, I think, for this running back room, Luke, was they brought in a couple of experienced, proven transfers so that what happened in October, November last year doesn't happen again. And that's where they bring in Ohio transfer C.A. Bangura. What am I doing, Luke? I'm out of practice. I should have had you attempt that first name.
Yeah, I can get Marcus Major for sure. But yeah, C.A. Bangura wasn't going to get that one at all.
And I understand that some listeners are going to be like, well, Ryan, just another Mac running back. Not any good, just like Sean Tyler. Okay, the last two seasons at Ohio, he forced 60 missed tackles, had over 1,000 yards after contact in the Mac. Okay. And oh, by the way, because I know I'm going to get this question, only 4 career fumbles on 400-plus carries. I'm not worried about it. I've heard positive things about him in workouts. He looks the part. He's going to get a lot of reps this spring because Marcus Major, the Oklahoma graduate transfer Minnesota brought in, is not going to be 100% for the spring. He's recovering from labrum surgery from after his last season there at Oklahoma. But he played a ton of snaps at Oklahoma. I mean, we're talking about a guy as a Sooner that had almost 200 carries for the Sooners. So he's experienced. He's got 1 year left. You also get Bryce Williams back, which surprised me. Back when the online roster came out, he's coming back for a 7th year. And then you've also got the Michigan State, Michigan State lore, 204-yard performance, the outside zone king himself, Jordan Newbin. Yes, you've got a couple of true freshmen in Jaden Wright and Femi Ijeboy who are also on campus. But I think the point I want to make here, Luke, is there is no reason why at any point that Darius Taylor should get 30 carries again, because you got C.A. Bangura, you got Marcus Major, you got Jordan Newbin, Bryce Williams. Like, you have experience there. You have a bunch of experience there. There is no reason that Fleck shouldn't be able to trust at least 2 of those 4 guys I just mentioned. But again, I understand, and I love to say this, and I get ridiculed for it because I say it too often. It really doesn't matter to me what Fleck says in the spring when I ask about it, because the reality is what, Luke? I hear what you say and I trust what you do. I just want to continue to plant those seeds potentially. Maybe I give myself too much credit in the back of the head coach's mind of maybe you don't have to run this guy into the ground when you got Bangura, Major, Williams, and Newbin sitting there on the bench. But we'll see what happens here. In theory, Luke, they have much more depth, much more experienced talent in that running back room. But they got to go out and prove it here this spring.
Yeah, and I think it's something we should point out that while, you know, we've often said, hey, you got to throw the ball more, You can't be so predictable, et cetera, running the ball. They're able to get some of these transfer guys because they've run the ball, right? And these are guys that are looking for an opportunity, and they're willing to come in behind a Darius Taylor because they know that there are carries to be had, right? So I'm still going to pound the table.
Minnesota was on running back five yes. in early October of last yes. year. So even if you're not an RB1 to break fall camp,
yes.
history says the angry running back god currently resides in Dinkytown.
Well, and you also can go back to the Bucky Irving and the Kai Thomas years, right?
Yep.
You know, they're
that's how they got their shots.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to get
years ago.
Yeah, you're going to get a chance. So, we do need to talk about receiver. We obviously know that Daniel Jackson is back. Lamaki Brockington should be healthy again. Elijah Spencer is back as well. But yeah, these are guys, you know, we can obviously applaud Daniel Jackson and what he's been able to accomplish. And, you know, we said last year he was probably clearly wide receiver one. There's no question anymore. He's very much wide receiver one. So now the question becomes, you know, who can they supplement in behind him and, you know, feature as well? They can, as he's going to take on probably lots of double teams or bracket coverage. You know, who's going to step up, Ryan?
I mean, that's the question. I mean, that's maybe one of the most important questions I have for this offense is, okay, you got an experienced signal caller now in Max Brosmer. You have a budding star in Darius Taylor that's going to garner a lot of attention. You have Daniel Jackson, who finished top five in the Big Ten in receptions, receiving yards, and PFF receiving grades. And he was also top 10 in the conference in contested catch wins. I mean, he is a Big Ten star. Okay, well, someone has to play complement. Someone has to supplement that. And I'm tired of this receiver room, frankly, underachieving. I looked at the stats last year. I know Ethan's balls weren't always accurate and catchable, but they had the pass-catching core as a whole, Luke, had as many drops as they had contested catches last year. And that's just, frankly, not going to get it done, especially in the Big Ten, especially if you're going to be expecting – to win 7-8 games. So the question is, can Elijah Spencer get back to form? Can Elijah Spencer, who is prolific at Charlotte as an underclassman, and it just really didn't break right for him last year, can he step up? Can Lamaki Brockington, who's likely the best run-blocking receiver they have, the hero of the 2022 Wisconsin game, when he takes that slant to the house, wins the game for Minnesota, dealt with injuries last year, returned for the bowl game, can he find consistency and health in year four for him? Because Corey Crooms, who was second in the room in receiving yards and receptions, is now gone. You have Brevin Spanford, who's obviously gone, Chris Ottman-Bell. You're going to be replacing three of your top five target guys from last year. The only one returning outside of Daniel Jackson is actually Darius Taylor. Elijah Spencer's also there in the mix, but they need it to be, I think if you're going to count on one of them, I would count on Elijah Spencer. But you've also got to get something from Emporia State transfer Jalen Varner, who was very good at the Division II level the last couple of years. And then if you want to hope and dream on someone in terms of a freshman, I would tell you Kenrick Lanier, a former Army Bowl All-American, now goes into year two. He was a step ahead of all the other freshman receivers last year. And what do I mean by that? Well, when the TJ McWilliamses and the Nuke Hayeses of the world were on scout team, Kenrick was up with varsity. Say he was practicing with the game day receivers. He was learning with them because he was only an injury away from consistently seeing the field. So now that Crab's gone and Crooms is gone, I'm curious to see if Kenrick Lanier can provide them something. And now, yes, they also have Donald Driver's kid and Christian Driver. They have Kristen Hoskins there as well. I understand that. But I think the five names I would have fans focus on here, at least to start spring ball, are Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, and Lamaki Brockington. And then we'll see if Jalen Varner and Kenrick Lanier can also provide something in in their only year here with Max Brosmer. But just in general, Luke, I want to see if this group can actually get back to what we saw maybe earlier in the Fleck regime when we're talking about the a young and healthy Chris Ottman-Bell, Demetrius Douglas. I don't even think necessarily back to the Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman year, because that was such an anomaly with two first team all Big Ten receivers. But if you can just find a second and heaven forbid, a third receiver that can help you, Max Brosmer, out. I mean, that would do such immense things for Daniel Jackson, Darius Taylor, and the rest of this offense.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that's interesting, and we can probably dive into this later, is I mentioned earlier, I actually liked a lot of what I saw from Harbaugh. I liked how he was able to scheme a guy like Daniel Jackson open, even when it was very clear you're trying to get the ball to Daniel Jackson, right? They were able to scheme him open. Now with a quarterback you know, that has more experience, are you able to give defenses more diverse looks and not always trying to scheme one individual open, but giving them multiple options, you know, or playing more decoy and trusting that trusting other guys that can step up. I'm really curious to see what might develop with this offense there. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I'm hopeful that that might be what can happen. And you can see a guy like Elijah Spencer, who basically just caught touchdowns last year. That's all he did. It felt like
9 receptions, 3 for touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. And sneakily,
but to your Harbaugh point in terms of being able to move Daniel Jackson around, I think that's an under talked about point, especially heading into 2024. Is last year Corey Crooms was their predominant slot receiver.
Yes.
And I think in 2024, or at least to start spring ball, that position is very much up in the air in terms of, I think you'll see Daniel Jackson play inside and outside, depending upon how the defense is playing him and how Minnesota wants to scheme him the football. I think Elijah Spencer is another guy that can certainly play in the slot. I think they would ideally want to keep Lemeke and Kenrick Lanier outside, and we'll see what they end up doing with Jalen Varner, who predominantly at Emporia State was an outside receiver. But if you're trying to think to yourself, I want to get really deep into the weeds, Ryan, who's going to be the slot receiver?
Yeah.
I think you're going to see Daniel Jackson, Elijah Spencer, and hey, maybe even they get crazy and give Darius Taylor some reps there.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually where I was going to go. I wouldn't be surprised, especially if they can find they can find a stability at running back. You know, that's how good that Darius Taylor is. And, you know, he has that wide receiver background. And then correct. Lastly, I thought that sneakily Lemeke Brockington before injury was playing really well. And that actually hurt them a lot. You mentioned his run blocking, but even as a receiver, the separation he was able to get, like for instance, in the North Carolina game, balls just weren't there. I'm glad you also addressed this, just another point. Can they really drop that many balls this year? Right? Like, they dropped so many balls. So
they just dropped too many. And again, Ethan's accuracy was an issue. I'm not disputing
that's
that.
Part of it. It's not all him, though.
That just needed to be caught. And I know too many of those came from the next position and my former guy, Brevin Spanford. So I'm still my guy. I'm going down with the ship because I truly believe he's going to be an NFL draft pick here in a few weeks.
Yep.
But to your point, Lemeke gets injured against Louisiana Lafayette, doesn't return until a little bit against Wisconsin, and then fully in the bowl game. I mean, there are just guys that need to answer the questions outside of Daniel Jackson. Can Elijah Spencer regain it in year two at Minnesota? Can Lemeke Brockington finally take that step forward? A lot of people thought he was going to take last year. Can Jalen Varner provide a spark in his first year in the Big Ten? And then can Kenrick Lanier, again, if you're asking me to place my bets on what freshman takes a step forward, it would be Kenrick Lanier. Can he find something and maybe provide a little bit different of a skill set to that room? Because he's probably the tallest of the receivers that I've mentioned so far. But, I mean, he's certainly a different skill set. So it's questions that Matt Simon's room has to answer because they have to be better in 2024. Yeah. Minnesota's going to win more games.
All right, let's talk a little about tight end. You alluded to the fact that Brevin Spanford is gone, but Nick Calarup and Jameson Gears are going to be back. And then really from there, Ryan, I got nothing. So you're really going to have to carry this. I have been able to ride on your affinity for Brevin Spanford for the better part of 5 years now. I sneakily like what I see out of Jameson Gears and have seen over the last year. But I'm interested to see, you know, who are these other guys that are going to contribute, and can we find a you know, receiving predominant tight end as well?
It's an interesting group to talk about just in general because they were so inconsistent last year, whether it was Brevin Spanford, Nick Calarup, and they were so inconsistent. Their position coach got fired in September because of it. Call it fired, call it reassigned, whatever you want to call it. But that's where Andrew Soder got demoted to an analyst type of role, and Minnesota had a different coach step in. Now it's going to be Eric Kaler coaching. Not that Eric Kaler, by the way. Different Eric Kaler, not the former university. Was it president? He was the president when I was at school.
Yes, he was the president when I was there too.
Okay. So he's now he's a longtime MAC offensive coordinator. He's going to be the tight end coach for this year. You got Nick Kallerup coming back for another season. The Wyzetta former walk-on had an outstanding 2022 as a run blocker specifically. Was a lot more up and down last year, but so was anybody who played tight end for whatever the reason was. And to me, it comes down to, okay, Jamison Gears, now is your time. It's like if you told me one player on offense has to assert himself or else it's going to get a little bit wonky with reps going into fall camp, it's Jamison Gears in this tight end spot because he's patiently waited his turn behind Brevin Spanford these last few years. He's already going to be in year four coming up here this fall, but he's only played 190 snaps on offense. And yes, you saw him in the bowl game. You saw him featured. You saw him catch that touchdown from Cole Kramer there. He's got the skill set and he has the tools to be an impact tight end. He just has to go out and do it because he's still inexperienced. Now, if it's not Jamison Gears, I think the name that has been getting the most steam to me from behind the scenes is Pierce Walsh. Who is Pierce Walsh? He's going to be a redshirt freshman. He's year two from the Chicago scene, just like Jamison Gears. I think there's a lot of optimism about what he can bring in the pass game. You've also got Nathan Jones there in year three. I think for me, I think I see him as more of a Nick Kallerup type of body that is probably a better run blocker than a pass catcher right now. And then you've also got some younger guys like Sam Peters going into year two. And then you'll also be able to see a couple of true freshmen there this spring by the name of Jacob Simpson and Julian Johnson. But to me, Luke, this comes down to, can Eric Kaler get the most out of Jamison Gears? Because he's inexperienced, but he's, I mean, going into year four this upcoming fall, he's got to be almost of the legal drinking age, if not already. And it should be his time to shine. I mean, this should be him getting 25, 30 catches this fall if it breaks right for him. And if not, I think that's where you can see a Pierce Walsh or a Nathan Jones potentially come in to steal some of those snaps. But you're going to see when they go 12 personnel, Nick Kallerup. But on those passing downs, I think you'll see more Jamison Gears, Luke.
Okay. I'm interested to see how this all shakes out. And, you know, like any position, you're one play away, Ryan, right? Like from needing to be able to step up. So it seems like this room is pretty young, but excited to see, well, outside of Kallerup and Gears, this room is pretty young and curious to see who might step up and if they're given and afforded the opportunity. Let's move on to offensive line here real quick. So I think we have to play the scenario game, Ryan, if we're going to talk about offensive line.
For the third straight year, we have to, and I know people don't want to, but I'll get into why we need to play it because I believe it actually happens, but go ahead.
Okay, let's play scenario one. Scenario one would be Quinn Carroll plays tackle, and then obviously scenario two, Quinn Carroll plays guard. So let's start with scenario one.
So scenario one, it looks a lot of the same because the offensive line should be the strength or yes, one of the strengths of this offense. They return four of their five starters. They return a fifth guy in Greg Johnson who played 400 snaps for them as a true freshman. I mean, you have one of the best left tackles in the Big Ten, if not the country, returning in Ariante Ursary, and you're wondering, who am I going to put my Burns curse of approval on? It's Ariante Ursary is going to be a top 100 pick easily in ink. Don't care who writes it down. In 2025, he just has so many good things going for him, especially with his physical tools. I mean, he's really, really good. He took that step in 2023 in year two as the starter at left tackle, and I'm excited to see what he's going to do in his third year as a starter at left tackle. Now at left guard, I think you have Tyler Cooper, and in this Quinn Carroll stays at tackle scenario, Martez Lewis is your right guard like he was for most of last year. Carroll's at tackle. And then at center, Nathan Bowe graduates, and so it's a competition between Greg Johnson, Cade McConnell, I think Ashton Beers as well. If you're asking me who I would place my bets on right now, I would say Greg Johnson, but that is certainly wide open. Now, in the world in which I choose to live, Quinn Carroll slides to guard for 2024. where I think his skill set is obviously more tailored to. And if that's going to be the case, that means somebody else has to win that right tackle position for Brian Callahan to make that happen. Because I think Quinn Carroll has certainly, and I like Quinn Carroll. I think he is a good Big Ten offensive lineman. I just think he can be a great interior offensive lineman because obviously his strengths are run blocking, inside zone gap. I mean, gap scheme as well. I just think that he gets exposed on the edge going against the Big Ten edge rushers, where if you can slide him inside to deal with 275 to 300 pound defensive tackles, he's going to do much better. But if that's going to happen, Martez Lewis has to step up and potentially be that right tackle guy. Maybe Tony Nelson in year three, Phillip Daniels in year two, Spencer Alvarez in year three. I think if you're asking me which guy am I putting the most chips in this spring, it'd be Martez Lewis. Now, the thing I would have you ask me, and I'll ask myself this, I suppose, what changes from this spring to last spring to make you think, or believe at least, that Martez Lewis can win the right tackle job? Well, I would say last spring, Martez was splitting reps with Quinn and J.J. Gaudet because J.J. Gaudet was also competing at that right tackle spot. He's now at Illinois State, elected to hit the portal after the season. And so I think they're going to be all in this spring on trying to get Martez Lewis to be an adequate right tackle because I think Quinn Carroll would be an upgrade over what Martez was at guard last year. I think you got the left side down pretty good between Ariante and Tyler Cooper. Now we'll see if they elect to put Greg Johnson there or not, or if he doesn't win center. But I'm just telling you, I think Quinn Carroll, if in the final year, because he's got 1 year of eligibility left here, at least according to the Gopher Football Online roster in year six, I think if Quinn Carroll starts 13 games at right guard, at the end of the season, he's going to be an all Big Ten guard. And then he's done what's best for the team the last couple of seasons, and that's been playing tackle because no one else has stepped up there. And I think my hope would be that Martez Lewis now is a senior, Tony Nelson in year three, potentially Phillip Daniels in year two. I've heard a lot of optimism about him, or even the kid from Columbia Heights and Spencer Alvarez after a couple of years to gain weight. You know, the one of the four of them I would hope can step up and potentially be that guy for this 2024 offensive line, because it's going to look a lot different in 2025 when Ursary's in the NFL, Quinn Carroll graduates and hopefully gets a shot there. Tyler Cooper's out of eligibility and we'll see if Martez Lewis wants to come back for a sixth year or not. But the point here remains, Luke, they should be pretty good up front. Now, especially behind them, we're talking about guys who are year three, you know, guys like Tony Nelson, Ashton Beers, Cade McConnell, you know, a lot of those guys that I know people want to talk about. I think they're just another year away yet, because while I do believe Tony Nelson's going to be able to compete at right tackle, I still think it's probably another year away that he potentially wins that. So I think if you want Quinn Carroll to slide inside and for Brian Callahan to trust that, Martez Lewis is arguably the offensive lineman with the most on his plate to try and make Brian Callahan believe.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It kind of feels like we're living the same saga once again. But
well,
you
we
know,
have been, because I've talked about exactly. This now for multiple years.
Yeah.
And I know some fans will be, you know, Ryan, you know what you're talking about. They're not ever going to do that in year three. I'm telling you, all the people I talk with behind the scenes, I'm setting it up for you like it's being told to me, that they want this to happen, but it's not going to happen unless someone else can beat Quinn Carroll there at right tackle. Again, Quinn has done what's best for the team and not necessarily what's best for his skill set. But if they can just get somebody to really solidify themselves at right tackle, I think that interior offensive line can be really freaking good if Quinn can stick there at right guard.
All right, I think that'll wrap it up for this episode. Again, thanks to Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group. If you're looking to buy or sell a house and you want part of that transaction to support Gopher Athletics, go to teamdinkytown.com or call 612-250-8562. Other than that, Ryan, looking forward to breaking down the defense, and go Gophers.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.